Recording. Hello, everyone. It is our May support call. Really nice to see you. Who wants to go first? Who's got something? What's happening for you? It's going to be a short call. I'm assuming you all came because you got stuff. So let's see. Lisa, you're unmuted.
Well, I am muted because we can't sit in silence. I actually came to observe. but I have got something. It's not really a dilemma, but, you know, it could be interesting to unpack.
Perfect.
Okay, cool. So I have a client who's come to me when I was doing the Rest Without Guilt stuff the other month. She came through, wanted some help, and I've worked with her several times in the past, so probably over the last 12-14 years, maybe, yeah, about 14 years. Haven't coached her for a really long time. Previously worked with her more on business stuff. She's got her own business. But this time, like, since we last worked together, she's got three children. She's had two since we last worked together, and very much needs this support. And what has been so fascinating, so I guess this was really kind of like, I just wanted to bring it as a, how interesting, I wasn't expecting this. I thought I knew to expect in terms of coaching her, and it feels like I'm coaching a completely different person. And I mean, it's like it's cool. It hasn't like knocked me sideways or anything. But I spent a lot of the first session going, "Huh, this is new. This is interesting." And I feel like what I'm receiving from her is the self-concept stuff. I feel like previously I would as the terms now, the middle one, formed, is that the middle,
yeah,
one
formed, yeah.
So formed and even reformed.
Oh, you're just breaking up a little bit, Lisa, sorry.
And oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now.
It's a bit unstable. I don't really know why. So I would have put her like formed, reforming sometimes. She goes against the grain, her work. And when she...
Oh, we've lost you, Lisa.
Frozen.
Sorry.
This is frozen.
Hang on. Yeah, you just froze.
Yeah. Are you? Am I back?
I think so. You may want to turn your video off if that helps you.
Yeah, let's do that, because it's quite stormy here today. It sometimes affects our internet. Let me know if I break up.
Okay.
So, when it comes to working on her personal stuff around her self-care, around her the space that she is or isn't, more to be exact, taking outside of motherhood and running her business, I feel like I'm very much working with somebody who's at a forming stage, and I really wasn't expecting that. Like, I knew intellectually people can be in very different places, but with this particular person, it's really surprised me.
Right.
And the kind of self-doubt I heard from her before was probably around, I would have said, critic. I'm very much not hearing critic. I'm hearing martyr scapegoat, which is a classic combination I am finding,
yeah,
when I'm working with people on this subject.
Yeah.
So I've just been kind of sitting with it as a how interesting kind of thing, and just coaching her, you know, as this, you know, almost brand new person that's showing up.
Yeah.
Although obviously I've got a bit of history there, and Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling okay about it, but I guess maybe there's some uncertainty around, I don't know, am I doing it right? I think I'm meeting her where she is, but I am finding the martyr scapegoat combo with the reforming self-concept. That feels tough, feels a bit challenging.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm having to go very, very slowly and gently so as not to freak them out and not to kind of, we're also, because I've worked with her historically, we're just going session to session. I did say to her in the beginning, I feel like this might take some time to unpack. And she was like, yeah, but when I've coached with you in the past, I've got it all done in like one or two sessions, which has. And so I'm like, okay, cool. And this is a really different area. And I have this hunch that it's going to take more unpacking. I feel like she's realized that, but there's this kind of push and pull in me of almost wanting to take her at the speed that we've worked at before, while knowing that that's not okay, and wondering if she's still expecting that, and not wanting to freak her out so that she doesn't end up coming back for it, because this is really like the self-doubt stories that we're working on, you know, it's really deep shit. Conditioning around motherhood is really ingrained, as we know, and I know quite a lot about her because we used to live in the same area, and I know a lot about her family, and I can really see how deep those roots go. You know, there's almost like generational trauma stuff attached to this, although I don't feel like she's in any way re-traumatized or at risk of re-traumatizing. So it's just that kind of getting comfortable with it needing to be slow.
What does that bring up for you as her coach? What do you make it mean to go slow?
I've got this, like, I feel like I've almost kind of split into two parts. Like, part of me is like, this is totally cool, you know, this is where she's at. I mean, that's my healthy self, isn't it? My healthy self is like, this is where she's at. You're meeting her there. You know, you're making sure that, you know, I made sure that she knows that it might take time. And I'm making sure that whenever we're finishing, that she's taking stuff away that feels doable. And that, you know, yeah, cool. And the other part of me, I mean, it's not really shouting that loudly, which is why I wasn't necessarily going to bring it. But I suppose there's some kind of attachment to, I want to be sure that I'm doing enough with her that she feels like it's a process to keep engaging with, because I can actually, this is something I always have to be wary of, because I have such a wide open heart sometimes that I just want to take care. I want to caretake. Yeah. And I like this woman a lot. And I can see that she is really at risk of complete burnout. Like, you know, there's health things coming up. I can see from looking at her that, you know, the facial pallor, the kind of drawn look, I've never seen her look like this before. And I just feel like I really am concerned about keeping her engaged, because I know that she's doing lots of good things, and I know that unpacking this is so important. And so it's just that, oh, how do I get that balance right? Am I getting it right?
So one of the things that we can do when we are have hearts as big as yours and feel that compulsion to caretake is that we kind of solve for the client.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you've talked to her about what you're observing.
As in the risk of burnout?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I have. I mean, she, you know, she's voiced it to me. She, when we first spoke, she's quite scared about where she is right now.
Yeah.
Of course, in no way do I want to kind of, you know, make her feel more worried about that. And yeah, I feel like we've got a pretty good open dialogue, and and I feel like I'm reflecting what I'm seeing. I mean, she's quite, I think we have a good enough relationship and I have unpacked enough stuff in the past that she's really clear with me about where she is. Like, I was gently kind of, not pushing her, but, you know, I was kind of gently challenging something the other day because she was telling me some stories about what was impossible. And, you know, I gently challenged her, and she did own the fact that she was trying to keep everything extremely, extremely safe.
Right.
And we got a little bit more movement, but she was also really clear, like, that's as far as I can go right now.
Yep. So you've got a client who knows herself, and it sounds like she has a pretty good idea of what's possible right now.
Yeah.
And the thing is that limit is always going to be influenced by the amount of energy we have. So if she is close to burnout, even if you can see, well, actually, if you did this, it would be better, right? We solve for the client, then her capacity will probably be limited right now.
Yeah, totally. And we're very much working within it.
Exactly. And so it's about kind of working within the constraints that the client brings always, right? So when we're meeting the client where they are, we're also meeting like their level of energy, their capacity, how burnt out they are, how, you know, kind of where they're at. So I'm wondering, like, you know, if the kind of goal of the coaching right now might be quite different to what it's been in the past.
Yes.
Yeah, she's in a different place.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like it's more about how can she feel resourced? How can she feel like she's in choice given her current circumstances?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And what she has chosen to experiment with, while it's, I guess if we were looking at it from the outside, we would say, oh my gosh, you know, really tiny things. They're huge for her. You know, massive, and she really needs to feel supported and seen in how big that is for her. And I, you know what, I also can totally empathize because I've been there when my kids were younger. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, although I think she knows that it's not going to completely change how she's feeling, when you're in that place where you're getting absolutely zero space for yourself, just an hour is like gold.
yeah. But that could well be her lifeline right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think maybe that hour gives her, I mean, there are some pretty big stories to unpack, and some of them involve her family and the example she was shown by her mum, who was constantly in and out of burnout, like in a big, big way, even hospitalised at one point. Yeah. And there's also some stuff with her husband, who she has a good relationship with, but I think that they have brought some stories together in their relationship and are maybe kind of adding one to the other, and she's making a meaning out of that. I'm not entirely sure that the meaning is true, or if it would hold up if she challenged it.
Yeah.
And so I feel like actually, while we're experimenting very gently, I feel like that actually buys her space, gives her space to unpack these stories a bit, which she couldn't even think of otherwise.
And I think that it may be that is really helpful for you as well, because it sounds like when you first started sort of sharing that, oh, maybe we should be going faster, maybe we should be doing more, and actually what you're sharing is, oh no, hang on, we're going at the right pace because the capacity is different to what it was in the past. The subject matter is different to what it was in the past.
Yeah, totally, Sass. And you know what? I don't think that this would have been triggered for me were it not for the fact on the first session, I was like, okay, look, there's often a lot of layers to this stuff. I was really, really straightforward with her. You know, the work I've done with this so far is showing me that this is going to take a while to unpack.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh yeah, but you know, we got my whole business vision, strap line, everything done in one session before. Like, I respond really well to coaching. She actually said that.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know you do, love. And I love that. And also, this might be different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is.
Well, it sounds to me like you've really kind of both established and then keep reestablishing like the new sort of dynamic of your coaching relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we do. You know what, I think my self-doubt is kind of wondering if I've got enough of a handle on that martyr scapegoat combo. Like, I think I have revisited it, and I think I need to revisit it again.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have any tips on that combination? Because it is a big one, isn't it?
It really is. And I see it a lot in, like, there's often a real relationship with the martyr to either the bystander or the scapegoat.
Okay.
But as well, it can sometimes partner up with the critic, right? So you're overgiving, but you're never giving enough.
Yeah.
So the martyr is a bit of a partner upper. Like, it does like to kind of do a bit of a combo deal.
Yeah.
What can happen when it's with the scapegoat is that I'm overgiving and I'm overwhelmed at the same time.
Yeah.
So that is like the perfect combination for burnout.
Yeah, totally.
So what I would say is, you know, like the way that we kind of interrupt, and actually one of the things I'm thinking about teaching a standalone class on this, just because I think it would be helpful. So if we do self-acceptance, which is the martyr, I'll just quickly write this down so that we know what we're talking about. Self-worth, self-trust, and the bystander, and self-belief and the critic. What I'm finding, right, is that the one of the relationships that's quite helpful to notice, can you see that okay, Lisa?
Yeah, I can, yeah.
One of the relationships that's quite helpful to notice, I don't have a different coloured pen, sorry, is that the critic needs self-acceptance, right? Okay. Self-acceptance is all about, this is all of me. These are all my parts.
Yeah.
This is who I am. These are all my emotions, my needs, right? So the critic needs self-acceptance to heal. The martyr needs self-worth to heal, right? Because okay. That's all about boundaries and the territory we take up.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. And the scapegoat, oops, that's around the wrong way. Scapegoat needs self-trust, right? I can trust myself to make decisions.
Yeah.
Keep moving, right? And the bystander needs self-belief.
Yeah. Okay.
So I just find that relationship can be quite helpful to bear in mind.
Yeah.
Like that actually, it's almost like this for me kind of adds another layer of why these parts or how these parts resources work together to really support our clients. And I kind of just noticed this as I was sort of thinking about ways to intervene in different, you know, for the different protectors.
Mm.
And actually there is this really sweet kind of relationship where it's the next thing around the compass.
Yeah.
Is what that shadowy part needs. So that can be quite helpful just in terms of like, what can I do with this client? Like, where can I go? What kind of interventions would really help to address the root cause?
Yeah.
Right? So when you've got a martyr, it's all about the self-worth stuff, right? And that is always going to be about boundaries.
Yeah. That's so helpful, Sass, because I feel like we've been working on some of the stories that sit within the martyr that have her in this overgiving mode. And I had this hunch that actually I really needed to do some warrior stuff with her.
Yeah.
And so I felt like it wasn't time to get into that in the session, but I offered her that I recorded the meditation and sent it to her and said, look, give this a go, see how you feel about that, because I felt like it might open up a new dimension for us to explore.
Nice.
So yeah, that really helps to know that I've kind of got that.
And the thing about warrior, like self-worth, it's fundamentally about the space we allow ourselves to take up.
Yeah.
So the boundaries that we put around ourselves, the territory we have, but it's also about really practical things. Like it's always about kind of taking action, moving forwards, like where's the line in the sand kind of thing. That's because it's quite earthy. That's how I like to think about this part.
Yeah.
One of the things to also think about is that it's very practical. So the warrior is about things like energy, time, money.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and literally the boundaries around those things.
Yeah, that's so, so true. And I love what you say about earth, because her work relates to plants in some way. And I use the example for her about, like, it feels like all the parts of the plant above the ground, like her role as a mum, her role as a business owner, her relationship with the family, like she's giving to those parts of her, but actually the roots of her, the part of her that's her alone, just her in the world, that's the part that I feel like needs feeding, because that, you know, it, the plant relies on that, and that's the part that's getting depleted. So that feels like it fits really nicely.
Yeah. And I think that can be a really helpful metaphor for her. Like if she knows plants, right? It's like if your roots aren't being fed,
yeah,
then nothing really can kind of sustain that for a long period of time. So any stories she has around selfishness, around capacity, around asking for help, all of those things, that's kind of like the top layer. But the bottom layer is really about it's okay for me to have my needs met. It's okay for me to take care of me. In fact, that is necessary for me to be able to do the, you know, the light side of the matter, which is to, you know, connect and have a sense of belonging with my people and myself.
Totally. And actually, we all know that plants' root system spread takes up much more space than we imagine it does, and it has to keep that plant up.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a great metaphor to work with, and that may really support her, is that, you know, it's something easy that she can come back to.
Yeah. I love it. Thank you, this is so helpful.
You're so welcome. Nice. Great share, Lisa. Thank you.
I'm nodding away to you, by the way, as if you can see me.
I'm assuming so. Helen, Maria, do either of you have anything that you wanted to chat about?
This might just require me to be going over my old notes again.
Well, you can use me for that.
Here, my dog is playing up. I had a like power hour with a boy a couple of weeks ago, and I had another one with him yesterday. His mum is a psychologist and works with teenagers as well, so I get actually quite a lot of parents like that working with me. But he's a lovely boy. He's in year 12, so he's in lower six. So he's doing his A levels next year. And he's doing like really hardcore A-levels, I can't remember, like sciences, you know, maths, that sort of thing. And he is desperate to go to Oxbridge and works himself to the bone. And his mum is, you know, and he's only in year 12, so he's not even in his final year. And his mum, so typically the kind of kids that come to me are the ones that don't have a clue how to start, like don't know how to revise, aren't working enough really. And he is just the whole other end of the spectrum. His needs are to work less. But and the what I so I worked with him couple of weeks ago, and then worked with him yesterday, and I did the tapestry exercise with him yesterday, because he, even though he works all the time, he feels he's really, really lacking in confidence. And so I think his like self-doubt is completely over-functioning. It's like, okay, so I don't want to just, the answer is I need to do more. So we did the tapestry about, and I asked him the question, it was like, how do I feel more confident in this? He's got a real A-level coming up in a couple of weeks. He's doing maths a year early. And, you know, the kind of the ones that his intuition wanted to listen to, was work more. You work more, you'll feel more confident. And I was trying to kind of get him to see that sometimes that might not, you might not ever feel completely confident. So how can we deal with that instead? And his answer is to work more. And I guess what my issue is, I don't know if I'll work with him again. I might do. This was just a one-off yesterday. How do you kind of get through to people, not get through to people, but how do you work with people who have, getting into Oxbridge is really bloody hard, and you do really have to work. And when you're there, you have to work. His mum's like, I'd rather him not go to Oxbridge. She was like, if I'm honest, I want him to go to a good university, but I don't, you know, and but kind of what she wants for him obviously is not, is kind of irrelevant. But I think it's when that self-doubt is speaking, seemingly speaking so much sense.
Yes. It's seductive, right? Yeah.
So I'm not sure the tapestry exercise worked brilliantly for him.
Yeah.
And I thought actually if I work with him again, I'm going to get him to do the archetypes. I don't usually use that with because I think my kids are a bit young, but he is, you know, he's 17 and he is quite mature. And I wonder whether actually the archetypes might help him.
Yeah.
So
what's coming to me is that this actually could be one of the limits of his own development.
Yeah.
Right, where he's at. Because for him, he is at 17 and just at his kind of age and stage, he's at the centre of his own universe.
Yeah.
So it will be very hard for him to see, well, actually, there might be other things that bring you, bring you satisfaction and meaning. So there may be like a limit to this in some ways, but what I'm seeing is that he's kind of got his self-concept is sort of dominated by working hard.
Yeah.
Right? It's not something he has or can choose to do. It's something he is.
Okay.
Yeah. I work hard. I am someone who works hard. That's me. Mm-hmm. And so when one of the ways you can kind of sometimes do this, and it's just a bit of a take on one of the exercises, which I can't remember, but is to actually do it as a kind of circle, like what are all the different parts of me?
Mm-hmm.
If this is all of me, right, I imagine that his working hard is all of this.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, you know, what is in here? What are the parts of him that aren't working hard? How does he feel about those parts? Because the thing is, like, if that's bringing him a shit ton of joy and satisfaction, and he's feeling really good about it, like, there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Nothing's gone wrong. That, if that works for him.
Mm.
But if there is a kind of belief that if I work hard, that is my, you know, me working hard equals what? You know, my value as a human, you know, my worth, what I bring to the table. You know, do you know what I mean? Like when that gets kind of suffused with those things, it means that we can't really see ourselves as valuable, worthy, and, you know, worthy of belonging to others unless we're working hard.
I see. Yeah.
Right. So it's like, I think part of this could be about reassuring his protector, which as a critic, even if it's not criticizing him, it's all about you'll never be good enough and you'll never be able to do enough, right? Yeah. So that, you know, we don't want that critic to resist by saying we want you to stop working so hard. What we want to do is actually allow him to get a little bit more perspective on what else, what does he like to do for fun?
Yeah, yeah. You know? And he said to me, I did take a break last week and I could see that it was good for me. You know, he said, I see, you know, and when I started working, I did feel better about working again. So there is that part of it. I guess nice. What I was trying to do with the tapestry is get him to trust himself, you know, that trust is to kind of start work on nurturing that self-trust that, and I think what is really showing up so much in, I'm doing a lot of work with kids at the moment about exactly who are taking exams, and it's such a big part of taking exams because you can, of course, you could be studying 24/7. There's no limits, you know, and it's sort of trusting that you've done enough. But yeah, it's about soothing that critic, isn't it?
Well, and also, you know, I don't know, if I was working with him, I might ask him things like, "What do you like to do for fun?"
Mm-hmm.
What do you imagine you would find fun?
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, just sharing, like, you know, all those parts of him that are on the bus, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of them that are, you know, kind of on their way to a science fair, right? That's where the bus is going. But all the parts of him that maybe want to throw a ball around or play video games or do whatever teenage boys do.
Yeah.
Listen to drill. I don't know. I'm plucking shit out of the air now. You know, maybe that, you know, is there a little bit of space for that, those parts?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to take away anything from, we're not suggesting that he has a complete personality transplant. If he's got a goal to get into Oxbridge, then amazing.
Yeah.
But also we want him to enjoy that process or at least feel some fulfillment and satisfaction from it. And to start to recognise that his worthiness is not dependent on that.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise, if he doesn't get in, who is he then?
And this is what his mum's worried about, is he's a twin as well. He's got a sister who doesn't work as hard and it comes easier to her.
Yep.
So I think with twins you have that natural comparison as well, don't you? It's totally. And siblings, it's unavoidable. Twins, it must be so much more acute. And I think, and they have a really good relationship. So she will tell him, oh, come on, no, come out with us. They have the same friendship group. And he won't. And I think what his mum is worried about is that he might get into Oxbridge, but it's because he's broken himself in order to do it. And will really struggle when he's there. But that is something he will figure, you know, he will have to figure out when he gets there, and it's not that, you know.
And that's the thing, right? We don't want him to peak in high school.
No.
Who wants to peak in high school? You know.
No.
So, you know, I think that's the thing. Like, if his kind of self concept is all about working hard, that part of him will be like, I don't know who I am unless I'm doing that. So we don't want to take away that level of comfort and safety. And it may be quite tricky as well. Like, it may actually bring him some frustration and a sense of, God, that's never enough. Yeah. But at the same time, that does feel safe to him. So it's almost like we just want to add in a little bit of fun stuff.
Well, what's that else there?
Another way to do this with younger people and, is to maybe think about, like, who does he admire? Who does he look up to? When he thinks about who he wants to be as an adult, like after Oxbridge, you know, because this is going to be a period of time in his life. Then who's he looking up to? And maybe finding out, what does that person do for him? You know, like, how is that person living a more well-rounded life? And you can usually find something, you know, and it's not the actual activity. It's about, you know, the fullness of a life is not measured by how many hours you're working, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry, I've muted myself because my dog's
very fine. He's great. Love it.
Very vocal. But yeah. Thank you. That's really helpful because I'm sure I'll come up with, I'll be met with that again.
Yeah, okay. For they, sure.
They're
yeah.
Very similar position. Again,
and, so. And I think that's the thing. When the self-concept is really rooted and quite entrenched in one aspect of a person's kind of personality or characteristics, that will be a source of deep safety for that person. And so we don't want to suggest that that's wrong or that it has to change. It's more about, but what else is there for you? You know, what could be there, even if it's not alive for you right now? Yes. You're so welcome.
Thank you. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks. All right. Helen, we have time if you've got anything that's coming up for you.
Yeah, I think
a client or a business thing.
I think I've been stalling because it's a little feels a bit tender. So this will be interesting. So I have a concern that I have a client that has become a little bit dependent on me. And it's just things, you know, so I use Voxer between sessions and it's just, you know, like some of the messages that she sends, etc., that I'm just like, I've been, you know, I've worked really hard in terms of my own detachment, but obviously I can't control her attachment. And yeah, and she's kind of, we're coming to the last session of six and she's like, oh, I don't know what I'm gonna do and all of this, and I'm trying not to, you know, kind of like react to that in any kind of way of that, you know, I mean, obviously the thing to do is if you're not ready, continue, but at the same time it's like, so have I created a situation here? You know, is it something I've done or is it her own stuff?
Right.
But it feels kind of tender because it feels like, did I do this wrong? I think it's probably the question, have I done this wrong?
So I wonder if you've talked about this with her, just in terms of like the nature of other relationships she has in her life.
I mean, all the relationships in her life at the moment are just a complete mess. So I've talked lots about the nature of her different relationships,
right.
But not in terms of endings, I guess.
Right. So she's a person who has some quite messy relationships.
So she's 70, and she has adult daughters, one of whom is disabled, and she also has a childhood trauma history herself.
Right.
And if you know, it kind of feels like there's been a bit of an unraveling lately amongst the daughters, and that's kind of, and I think along with COVID and isolation and all of that, it's kind of created a kind of some disquiet in the family. And I think that she is somebody who has done her best to create a perfect family. And of course, the impact that that might have had on her kids, particularly, you know, so her disabled daughter was born in the 80s. So she fought really, really hard to ensure that she was accepted in a society, which of course then was far, I mean, it's not great now, but it was far worse then.
Yeah.
You know, so she's worked really hard. Two of her daughters are actually not communicating with her at the moment. So I've talked about the fact that, you know, they have their boundaries too, and we respect their boundaries and, you know, not to push it, not to keep pushing yourself on them, etc. And then the third daughter is in lots of, has loads going on. And so they're supporting her and she's putting her energy there. But it's just, she also, when she found me, you know, through advertising and stuff, and we had an intro call, and it was like, this is exactly what I need. But she'd also kind of like gone through the GP for some counselling, and that has started. And because, of course, it's very different, she's kind of saying, oh, the counselling's rubbish. And I'm going, no, the counselling's counselling, and this is coaching, and they're different methods and processes, etc. But she keeps on talking about, oh, but your guidance. And I'm there thinking, I just ask you questions, you know. And yes, I might respond you know, and so she, you know, I might respond. I mean, I've had counselling, and I don't just sit there and wait for her to work it out in her head. And of course, we've talked about her protector, and we, you know, so we've talked about all of this stuff and lots of stuff around self-compassion. But she calls it my guidance, and I'm just thinking, you know, is she just constantly thinking that I'm going to be there to kind of guide her through this mess? And have I set up this situation? And do I give guidance? So it's tender because I'm thinking maybe I'm not really concerned about her dependence. Maybe I'm thinking I've actually done this wrong.
Right. Have you recorded any calls with her or listened back to them?
No, because they're face to face. So right, I don't record my face to face.
Right. And have you used the SOAP process at all? Yeah. And what does that tell you?
It tells me that the whole thing is really complex, and there is like complexity dripping off the walls. She's desperate. She is very desperate. And of course, she's desperate to fix everything because, of course, she needs this perfect family. And you know what? She has been so responsive. I mean, revelations around, you know, looking at what we did, her life map, you know, and looking at her younger self and actually how she was actually doing the very best she could. And if we, you know, if we look at it in our adult eyes, that's one thing, but if we actually look at the resources she had at the time, and she's responded really well. So it could just be that she's responding very well and nothing's gone wrong, but it's just this odd thing that she gets is, you know, oh, I don't know what I would do without your guidance. And I'm just like, I don't see
what do you make that mean. What do you think she will do or won't do without your guidance, without your work with her?
I don't know. I've never even thought about what she would do. I guess I make it mean that if she's dependent on me, I've got it wrong, I guess.
Interesting.
You know that.
So listen to that.
If she's hanging on my every word, then I'm not doing something right here.
Well, it also means that the coaching can only happen, or growth for this client can only happen when you're in the room.
Yeah, that is interesting. So she has been, of all of my clients, she does the homework, but she writes it down and she tears it up because she says she doesn't have a confidential space to store it.
Right.
And she and her husband probably doesn't respect her privacy boundaries, and you know, so she's concerned that he will read it. And so of course then then it's difficult for her to bring stuff to the session, and so it does feel quite often like it all happens in the room. Do you know what I mean?
So
I'm thinking, well, I haven't created that situation. That's, you know, because I've talked to her about, you know, well, surely there's somewhere.
Yeah.
Keep it in your handbag. You know, is there somewhere that you wouldn't go? You know, and actually has she, and, you know, talked to her gently about setting that boundary with him about her having a space?
Yeah.
You know, for that to happen. So the question you just asked about, does it only happen in the room? I think sometimes it feels like, for her, it does. Because she doesn't feel that there is a space outside that she can do the work. I mean, we've actually got quite a big gap between sessions this time, and she has kind of talked about how she's been doing stuff, which is great. But I remind her of the tools, and I think because thank you, Lisa. I just remind her of the tools because I want her to, you know, we use these, introduce these bloody tools, and they're great tools and they work in the session. And so you kind of know that. And so I don't know if she doesn't trust herself to use them, or if she still isn't in a place where she feels that she's kind of confident enough to ask for her needs at home, etc. Although the feedback in terms of how her husband is seeing the change in her is very positive.
Right.
You know, really, he's very encouraged by what's going on. So,
So here's what I'm observing is that you've been working with this person for, it sounds like, up to six sessions.
Yeah.
And she's 70.
Mm. I know.
So for a very long time, she has been living these stories. They've been who she is, not stories she has. She doesn't really probably realize how much choice and advocacy she has. She may have not, she may have never experienced, as Lisa says, this kind of safe relationship where mm-hmm. it's actually all about creating her own, you know, really healthy self-concept. She may never have experienced that before. Mm. And so what it sounds like what's happening is that she's realizing how much she values this. And she's worried about maybe slipping back, maybe forgetting, maybe not continuing to grow. And that's getting projected onto you because that's how she does relationships. They're a bit messy. She's a bit dependent.
Yeah. Yeah, so kind of anxious attachment type stuff.
A bit of anxious attachment is happening. And so what can happen is if we also have a bit of anxious attachment, we kind of get entangled with that. Like I can hear you kind of saying things like, have I done this? Is this something I'm doing? Only you can answer that. Okay? Only you can answer that. What I would offer is that this feels to me like someone, like your client is someone who is starting to realize who she can be.
Mm.
The kinds of relationships she wants, both with herself and her past and with who she is now. So that can feel a bit uncomfortable when it's like, if you feel a bit like, shit, this person's dependent on me. It's all on me. If I, if I don't do this right, I don't know what could happen, but it won't be good, right? And what I would just offer is, you just get to be a human with some coaching skills, right? And and this will be imperfect.
Mm.
What I would encourage you to think about is if she wants to continue to work with you, what are the boundaries that you would like to put in place for that relationship to feel healthy to you?
Yeah.
Like, what's the nature of that in CTI, in the Coaches Training Institute, they call it designing the alliance, but I don't really love that phrase. But there's something about, like, just having a conversation about what's working for you and what would you like to do differently. And for her too. And the way I phrase this with clients is, as I'll say, this is what I'm seeing and this is what I'd like to see more of for you. So something mm-hmm. like, what I'm seeing is that you are, you're recognizing your strengths and your qualities or whatever. What I'd like to see more of, or what I'd like to see for you, is that you start to really put this into place. So let's talk about how we can create some safety for you around this relationship outside of the room. Brilliant. And maybe that is you buy yourself a journal, that's where your homework goes, and you say to your husband, you have a conversation with your husband, you know, all this great work I'm doing, I really need you to respect that this book is something that is important to me and I don't want you to read it.
Mm.
And it's like, what's the next step for her to create a kind of wider space where she takes something of the room back into her life?
Yeah. And I think to a certain extent she's been doing that with her husband, but I think the stuff with her daughters kind of gets in the way. And I think in answer to the question, I think, as Lisa said, I kind of have this massive heart. And I say, this is years of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know,
it's not going to change in six sessions.
No. And of course, we have talked about continuing and I would be happy to continue. But it's just like, the odd, her fear of this potentially coming to an end.
Yeah.
I think is kind of like making me think, oh shit, have I done this wrong? Yeah.
And actually it's a conversation you both need to have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I started the conversation in actually because I kind of had a sense of how important it is to her.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, let's not wait till session 5 to talk about session 6. Let's start in session 4.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I kind of like started to talk about, you know, what we need to think about is what comes next, etc.
So I
kind of started that conversation. But no, I actually do. I feel better. As I said, it's kind of tender. But yeah. She's such, she's brilliant. She's so, you know, she really, I mean, you know, I now just kind of go, is that a story? And then she'd go, oh, yeah. And, you know, she picks it up and etc. So for me, you know, so asking if it's a story is not guidance. You know, it's just me asking questions.
And I think this thing about you guiding her, it sounds like that is an issue for you. So, you know, what are the boundaries you want to put in place around those sessions? So when she says, oh, that, yes, you've got me, whatever, that, and maybe has that idea, oh, you're guiding me, you can reinforce with her. Notice how you picked that up straight away, right? Mm. So you're actually reflecting back her healthy self.
Yeah. Yeah.
Notice how you pick that up straight away, dear client. Oh, you're getting good at this. I love it when you do that. You know?
Yeah, and I think I do. Yeah, I do quite a lot of that. But maybe she's just not seeing it for herself yet.
That's right.
You know, so when I'm saying, you know, well, you know, in session 1,
yeah,
you know, you wouldn't have picked that up. But here we are in whatever session. Yeah. Look how far you've come. I think it's been really important to reflect back to her. Her progress, because I think she struggled to see it, which when there is so much, it's unsurprising.
And that can be something that you do like every 3 sessions or so. Let's see where we're at.
Review,
you know, it's still a little review. And once she has her, you know, her coaching journal or whatever, you know, she can write down, like, these are the thoughts that I'm having on a daily basis. These are the feelings I'm having on a daily basis. And then 3 sessions later, these are the thoughts and feelings I'm having on a daily basis.
I give all of my clients, face-to-face particularly, but and I also send in the post a journal at the first session. So she has a journal, but it's empty. And so what she does, she's got all these scraps of paper. She writes on them and then she treads them.
So that is a really, that's a choice that she's making.
Yeah.
Now, maybe an unconscious one. She may have made up an idea that she doesn't have a safe place, but she may actually have one, and she is a grown ass woman and she's allowed to have one.
Absolutely. Right?
So, you know, part of this is about why are you choosing to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, she's talked about creating a space. So we're moving. I think she's kind of getting it that she should be able to have a space in her house for her own stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you know, this is a 50-year marriage.
Right.
So there's probably lots of habits that are happening in that marriage too.
Yeah, and it's, you know, maybe he has some safe spaces too.
Yeah.
You know?
He probably has lots.
I'm getting the feeling that he does. So
brilliant. I feel a lot better. One of my protectors is jumping in and going, oh, this is going well, you must be doing it wrong.
Interesting. This is going well, maybe you're doing it well is also another maybe, thought you could
maybe that's with. Maybe that's what else is true.
Amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks, folks. This was lovely. So nice to see you all. Okay. I will be in touch over email. Okay. Take care, everyone.
Bye. Bye.